listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
April 29th, 2017. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. And I'm broadcasting from the very, very chilly, overcast Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me on RBN. Their website, of course, is republicbroadcasting.org. View our guest lineup at spingola.com. Just click on the radio schedule button and select the year, month, and day to see all of the links to the programs to the guests that we have had on and to future guests. I hope that you will also consider subscribing to SpingolaSpeaks.net, where you may hear the audio files of my programs. And of course, you may also hear them at the RBN Archives. Another option is Wooly's blog, and that's wooliesblog.blogspot.com. If you appreciate the RBN programming, I hope that you will consider donating to the network. You may do that in one of three ways. Just call 800-724-2719 or visit republicbroadcasting.org and click donate, or send donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. Remember, there's no more .com, and my regular address has changed. It's deanna@spingola.email. You may join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. My guest today is James Perloff, and that is P-E-R-L-O-F-F. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, as well as other books, great articles. His website is jamesperloff.com. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Deanna. It's so good to be back with you, one of the best informed ladies on radio.
Oh, thanks. I remember one time that we were going to do a pre-recorded program, and so I set my Skype up, my Skype was set up, I contacted you via Skype, and I have a recording program, and I did not realize that it could be set for just recording one side of a conversation rather than both. And I didn't notice that until I decided, well, I better re-listen to the program, make sure everything is good, and I only recorded your side. So I had to go in and dub my side because you were very, very busy, but it worked out okay. But that was something sometimes the things that we learn the hard way.
Well, that had been a great show we'd done, even though half of it wasn't recorded. It was kind of like we threw a no-hitter and then we found we had to go out and pitch a game all over again, and I just wasn't quite ready for it. But we did tackle that subject again with both sides being recorded, and that's World War II, and that's sort of a marathon show. And I actually have that on my welcome page because I think that's a particularly significant topic. It's one of the most misunderstood subjects in history.
Oh, absolutely. World War II, I mean, look at all the things, all the warfare, all of the things that have occurred since World War II. I mean, it's just amazing. And, of course, the things that are going on now are a reflection of the things that went on then. And there's certainly a lot of things that are occurring now that are, I just can't believe that people believe, they still believe the same kind of rhetoric that was being used back in World War One. You know, oh, the Germans are cutting off Belgians' hands, and the the babies in the incubators are being thrown on the floor and now the Syrian gas attacks on the children. I can't believe that people still buy into all of those tactics, which is what they are.
Exactly. And if you look at the whole history of this, you know, you go back to the Spanish-American War when National City Bank wanted to take Spain's colony of Cuba over to get its sugar industry, as well as several other motives that they had. They used atrocity stories to get Americans thinking they can go fight for Cubans' freedom and democracy, right? And they found that women atrocities against women played particularly well with the American public. You know, you got to be a hero and go down and save these damsels in distress. And they even made Cuban women in their newspaper pictures look like white European women to, you know, increase the motivation. But then World War One, as you were saying, they changed it to children. Now they're cutting the hands off of children in Belgium. And of course, after the war, investigators went over to Belgium and found nobody to ever witness that happen. But then they, World War II, they had the Shanghai baby, and they realized that babies are about, you know, that's as bad as you can get. So now they've got, you know, as you were saying, they had the incubator babies, and it's got to be babies and children. We know that there's atrocities. We know there's the whole pedophilic phenomenon, satanic phenomenon going on. There are real atrocities. Unfortunately, the mainstream media that doesn't call attention to the real atrocities, but only the fake ones, like the sarin gas attack, which is the subject of my most recent blog post, in order to get people ramped up for another war.
Exactly. It's amazing. And they just keep falling for it. And, you know, even family, as often as I have talked about these things, I even have family members that still buy into these tactics, these stories, these fables. And they are just to get us to go to war. And I think you could go back, no matter what war you're talking about, whether you're talking about the so-called Civil War, the Mexican-American War, there's always some sort of gimmick that gets people to, men, to go and fight. And I think it's, I don't know whether it's part of a man's nature that they have to feel that they need to protect people. And when the TV's on, I often see these ads for wounded warriors. And I think of all of the, you know, the people that are going over there and what they might be experiencing. They lose their limbs, their lives, and yet we still have this war going on. And look at the length of the war. In the Middle East. I mean, we're not talking just, it has been going on, since the first Bush presidency.
It's insane, especially when you think of, the breadth of World War II, and that only lasted for America anyway, it lasted only, what, 3.5 years. And yet we've been in Afghanistan for, what, 16 years now? Yes. Almost 16 years. And the reason we went to Afghanistan was allegedly because the Taliban wouldn't give us Osama bin Laden, and all the Taliban asked for was proof that he had something to do with 9/11, which we wouldn't give him because we couldn't give it to them. Well, supposedly Osama bin Laden was killed in 2011, and we're still there. Same thing with Iraq, you know, we went into Iraq for, as everybody knows, supposedly because of weapons of mass destruction. Turned out they didn't have them, so we said, okay, now we'll find another reason. So now it's Operation Iraqi Freedom. You know, I go back to the old freedom and democracy motto that should have been worn out with World War One when Woodrow Wilson said the war would make the world safe for democracy.
Right. And as far as Osama bin Laden, I mean, the guy died, according to Fox News, in December of 2001. I guess they resurrected him. And why doesn't anybody remember this? I mean, they announced that he was dead, that he died in the hospital. I don't know. Nobody seems to have remembered. And then, of course, people who killed him the second time, or killed him the first time, actually, because he died of natural causes the first time, they seem to have disappeared.
Well, there was that takedown of the chopper with Navy Team 6, right? SEAL Team 6.
Yeah.
And, of course, nobody really in alt media really believed that story anyway, especially when they announced that they dropped his body in the ocean one day later. It was making any identification impossible. If anything, you would have wanted to take the guy alive if he's really the world's head of the world's biggest terror network. You want to interrogate the guy. You don't want to shoot him dead. And you certainly want to be able to prove your claim that you killed him by having his body on display, which it was, and it was obviously right out of Orwell's 1984, where they just created an event that didn't happen, and yet has now been written down in our history books.
Exactly. It is just amazing. So you have done a lot of, well, you've talked about Trump in some of your latest post. Trump is unmasked. 14 reasons why the Syria airstrikes were a really bad idea. So can you talk to us about that and give us some of those 14 reasons?
Yeah, this is so relevant, you know, and I'll just preface this by mentioning I did vote for Donald Trump. I'm sort of a guy who was past the stage of voting, but his rhetoric was good enough, and I was opposed so strongly to a Hillary Clinton presidency, you know, that old Clinton Bush machine that's been in place for so long, going back to the 80s, that I didn't strongly support Trump as an individual, but 99% of my memes were about Hillary. And he was saying the right things about being a non-interventionist and America first. And, of course, America first is anathema to the Council on Foreign Relations. In fact, let me just find that quote from Admiral Chester Ward, who was in the CFR and then exposed it. He said, quote, "In the entire CFR lexicon, there is no term of revulsion carrying a meaning so deep as America first." And, of course, that America First term goes back to Charles Lindbergh, who you and I admire for his stance during leading up to the Second World War, where, like his father, he tried to keep us out of war. Once Trump became president, I was taking a wait-and-see approach. I knew that he had a lot of Zionist connections, which were especially worrying to me. But he did a couple of good things when he came in. You know, he axed the TPP and reversed the transgender orders that Obama had. So I was waiting to see, but, you know, the day he launched those 59 missiles, everything changed for me, and I realized we have a man who's collaborating with the Zionist establishment. So let's talk about this airstrike on Syria. And it's funny, another radio show, when I asked me, oh, so you narrowed it down to 14 reasons.
Yeah.
Well, the first is that Trump himself had said this would be a terrible thing to do, because you go back to the 2013 alleged sarin gas attack by Assad. Here's what Trump tweeted, and this is my article. I've got screenshots of his tweets, and that's thanks to other people who found those. But the first one is from 29 August 2013, Donald Trump speaking here, quote, "What will we get for bombing Syria besides more debt and a possible long-term conflict? Obama needs congressional approval." A lot of
and that's from 2013.
Yeah, okay. That's a lot of wisdom just in that one tweet. I'll quote some more. I won't quote all of them. Next tweet from Trump. Quote, "If Obama attacks Syria and innocent civilians are hurt and killed, in the U.S. will look very bad," unquote. The next one, "If the U.S. attacks Syria and hits the wrong targets, killing civilians, there'll be worldwide hell to pay. Stay away and fix broken U.S., unquote. Next one from Trump. Quote, "The only reason President Obama wants to attack Syria is to save face over his very dumb red line statement. Do not, with the word not in capitals, attack Syria. Fix USA." And the last one I'll quote from Trump, quote, "Again, to our very foolish leader, do not attack Syria. If you do, many very bad things will happen. And from that fight, the U.S. gets nothing, exclamation point," unquote, Donald Trump. So here's a man who knew that this was a bad thing to do. He knew it was the wrong thing to do, and he did it anyway. That's just reason number one.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I admit I voted for him also for the same reason that you voted for him. And I walked back from the voting station, and I was thinking, boy, I don't know. I don't know where I'd, and within a couple of days, I did a flip. I knew that I didn't want the criminal Hillary in there. I mean, she's that whole family. I mean, they're horrid, absolutely horrid. And, I guess you just vote for the least evil, but just evil's still evil. Bad is still bad. I mean, we're getting, what, And all those quotes that you read, all those tweets, were within about a week's time. And he was saying the right things, and on the campaign trail, he was saying the right things. People were really applauding things. He was acting like a populist and appealing to the voters.
And yes, in fact, on the campaign trail, he said he would stay out of Syria.
Yeah.
Brother Nathaniel had a video recently with some of those clips of him saying that during the campaign. So even though those tweets were from 2013, in 2016, he was saying the same thing.
Exactly. And the thing is, this is the 100th day in office. And he did this within the first 100 days. Mm-hmm. I mean, my gosh, the very thing that he said he would not do and thought it would be the worst thing to do, he did within the first 100 days.
I've been wanting to make a meme of him and label it the biggest flip-flop in political history, but I have to look to make sure that that's true or not. But it's really fast. I thought he'd boil the frog, but, oh, by the way, it seems it's Pepe the frog that's getting boiled.
Exactly, yeah. Draining the swamp, it seems like he's filling it up. He promised to drain the swamp. Well, I don't
Yeah, somebody did a meme yesterday, said he drained it right into his cabinet.
Yeah. Oh, I love some of those tweets. They're great.
Reason number two is the U.S. Constitution. And here's what Senator Rand Paul, son of Ron Paul, tweeted after the airstrike on Syria. He said, quote, "The president needs congressional authorization if a military action is required by the Constitution," unquote. And that immediately got, when I retweeted it that day, it already had 16,000 retweets. And Trump himself had said that. And the first tweet that I quoted from him, that you need congressional authority. And even Obama, you'll recall, sought congressional approval for his initial desired airstrikes after the first alleged sarin gas attack. And even Johnson, after the fictitious Tonkin Gulf attack, got the Tonkin Gulf resolution. It's all bad, but at least they were working within the Constitution. Now, you're looking at the Constitution, I find it's unfortunate that the language is kind of bare. It says that the president is the commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy. And then in the section on the Congress, it says that Congress has the right to declare war. It doesn't elaborate a whole lot beyond those things, and it doesn't specify what the president may do as commander-in-chief or put limitations on it, but it's always been understood you work with Congress, and obviously the war-making authority was granted to Congress, not to the executive. And if you look at the Constitution and the Founding Fathers and what they said, it's very clear that they strongly always emphasized the importance of checks and balances. They didn't want an autocrat as president. Now, if somebody wants to argue that they think that Trump, you know, acting within his legal authority as commander-in-chief to launch these airstrikes, you know, by that same logic, he would have the authority as commander-in-chief to just unilaterally launch a first nuclear strike on Russia, right? Same logic. And start World War III and incinerate the whole planet. Obviously, the Founding Fathers did not intend a king-like president with that kind of authority. They wanted Congress to hold them in check. They wanted the Congress itself held in check by the balances between the Senate and the House. They wanted the executive and legal branches to be held in check by the judiciary, and they wanted the entire federal government held in check by the states, a matter which was unfortunately settled negatively by the Civil War. But obviously they were all about checks and balances, so this was unconstitutional, and Trump's own tweet proved that he knew that.
Exactly, yes. And, of course, all of the executive orders that presidents have written for such a long time bypass the Constitution and Congress and everything else. It's a shame what has occurred with the so-called three branches that are supposed to balance each other. Terrible, terrible. All righty.
Number three on my list of the 14 is that he acted with such haste without waiting to get his facts straight. And, you know, he reacted to Ivanka crying. He saw some photos, some of which look staged, some of which are probably real. But all he had was an intelligence briefing. And I guess we got a break, and we'll cover this on the other side of that.
Right. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Stay with us. This is Deanna, and our guest today is James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com, and we are going over the 14 reasons why Trump is unmasked. 14 reasons why the Syria airstrikes were a really bad idea. 14 reasons, and I believe we're on number 3. And somebody in the chat room said regarding the elections, we had a choice between two psychopaths, psychopath number 1 or psychopath number 2. So, how true. Okay, number 3.
Okay, so we were talking about the haste with which he reacted here, and of course, Colin Powell had many intelligence briefings about the so-called weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He gave an intelligence briefing of his own to the UN, as everybody knows. He showed diagrams and all this alleged evidence, and it turned out to be wrong, and he admitted he acted on faulty intelligence. So if you can be that wrong after that many briefings, why did Trump react with such haste? You know, in America, if somebody's accused of a crime, we just don't go and hang them. We have a trial. We get the facts. We hear both sides of the story, all sides of the story, before any kind of punitive action is taken. And what Trump obviously should have done, if he really believed that some great atrocity had been committed by the Syrian government, should have asked for a nonpartisan international commission to go in and do an investigation and render a report. Instead, he just put his finger on the red button and launched 59 missiles.
Yeah, 59. Whoa. Amazing.
And what's pretty clear that what happened here, and this comes from, I've got embedded clips, short clips, but one is from Peter Ford, the former ambassador to Syria, has been interviewed by this BBC, who is very eager to have him back up this Assad did it narrative. And they were even saying to him, the British defense minister accepts the American report, and he said, look, I don't leave my brains at the door. And he said there's two possibilities. One is that they were dropped by Assad's air force. The other is that Assad's air force dropped a conventional weapon which hit a chemical weapon stored by the rebels themselves. And Deanna, to this date, the Trump administration has not produced one shred of evidence that the Assad air force actually dropped the chemical weapons. And this is also what more and more journalists are finding. I've got an interview there from Tom Duggan, who's a British journalist living in Damascus. He says that is quite obviously the what happened is that these weapons belong to the rebels, the jihadists on the ground, and not the Syrian Air Force. So Trump hit the wrong target. He didn't wait for us to get his facts straight, but although I think you and I would both concur that he wasn't really interested in the facts. This is part of an overriding agenda.
Sure. And, I mean, why would any rational person drop destructive bombs that are sure to kill people because they're hurting people, because the so-called enemy is hurting people? And I think we've all heard also Assad saying, hey, we didn't use these weapons on children. So it's just, what did they say? Two wrongs don't make a right. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, there was 10 civilians, as I understand it, killed at that air base. And so he said he was upset about the deaths of civilians, yet he killed them anyway. And that's what he said, by the way, going back to those tweets we're quoting at the outset. He said, if the U.S. hits the wrong targets, killing civilians, there'll be hell to pay. And
yes,
he says if Obama attacks Syria and innocent civilians are hurt and killed, in the U.S. will look very bad. So he did the very thing that he said shouldn't be done. And he had good sound reasons in 13. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, reason number 4 on my list is that the United States was not attacked here. And, the purpose, of course, of the U.S. military is supposed to be to defend America and not to go around the world and kick people's ass and punish people the president doesn't like, or that other countries, you know who I'm talking about, doesn't like. And we're not to be the judge and the jury and to right wrongs in other countries, whether they're real or imagined. So this, again, violated the entire spirit and intent of our armed forces, which is to defend America. We were not attacked here.
But then we've never been, actually, if you get right down to it, give me one time when we were actually attacked, without it being, some sort of a false flag. Alrighty, right. We have a 3-minute, commercial, and we'll be right back. Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today for the first 2 hours is James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, and his website and other works. And his website is jamesperloff.com. Somebody posted a couple of quotes by Henry Kissinger in the chat room, and I think they're very appropriate. Henry Kissinger said, "It's not a matter of what is true that counts, but a matter of what is perceived to be true." And he also said, "What we in America call terrorists are really groups of people that reject the international system." And, of course, he's talking about the New World Order. And he says about that, "It cannot happen without U.S. participation, as we are the most significant single component. Yes, there will be a New World Order, and it will force the United States to change its perceptions." Now, Donald Trump met with Henry Kissinger on November 17th, 2016, and their conversation was about Russia, China, Iran, and the European Union. And Trump said that, he said, "I have tremendous respect for Dr. Kissinger and appreciate him sharing his thoughts with me." So, I like your image in your in number four. It says, "BB, Americans are complaining the bombing wasn't justified because Syria hasn't attacked America. So you know what to do." And on the other side of the image, it says, "Yes, Lord Rothschild, I'll have Mossad do another 9/11 on America. And this time, we'll leave Syrian passports at the scene." Very, very appropriate, right?
I'm just trying to stay ahead of the Mossad on that because, with the complaints that we weren't attacked, they'll be thinking about that. Well, we have to do something to make it look like Syria's attacked the United States in order to augment the motivation for America to go in with more ground troops and help us create our greater Israel plan, which is what's in back of all this.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so we're on number five. The chemical agents could not have been sarin gas.
That's right. And for this point, I quoted Patrick Lang as a former colonel in the Defense Intelligence Agency. He wrote a post, and he said that the missile strikes were, quote, based on a lie, unquote. And here's a paragraph in that post. He said, quote, "We know it's not sarin. How? Very simple. The so-called first responders handle the victims without gloves. If this had been sarin, they would have died. Sarin on the skin will kill you. How do I know? I went through live agent training at Fort McClellan in Alabama," unquote. So I've got to ask, Deanna, did Trump's military advisors not know what the sarin gas attack would look like? Apparently they didn't. And so you either have to say that they're very foolish, or, of course, the more likely option is they knew exactly what had happened. This was not sarin gas at all.
Sure. Or they just expected that the American public would just accept whatever they said without any question.
As the chat room person was saying, as Henry Kissinger wanted our perceptions to be guided by in this case, by both the executive branch and the media backing him up. Anyway, number six was an investigative journalist, Seymour Hersh, and published an article suppressed in the United States, is published overseas, but he found that the original sarin gas claims made about Assad back in 2013 were false. He reported that British labs had tested the sarin gas on the scene, compared it to the sarin gas in Assad's chemical arsenal, which has since been disbanded, and that didn't match, so it wasn't from his arsenal. Also, he interviewed witnesses, and he brought out the fact that it was the rebels in 2013 used the sarin gas with the help of Turkish intelligence, and that's now been confirmed by the Turkish media. So how come Trump didn't know that, and his administration didn't know that. And why didn't they take the fact that the first sarin gas claims against Assad have been discredited when evaluating this one? This should have been a big asterisk for them, a huge asterisk, filling a whole page before they would claim that Assad must go and Assad did this. And then number seven is really along the same lines. I've got a screenshot of an article that appeared in the Daily Mail of Britain. It's since been deleted by the Daily Mail, but Global Research has screenshot the entire thing and has it archived. And here's the Daily Mail's headline from 2013. Quote, U.S.-backed plan to launch chemical weapon attack on Syria and blame it on Assad's regime. And then the sub-headline is, leaked emails from defense contractor refer to chemical weapons, saying the idea is approved by Washington, unquote. So we know that there was already evidence being cited in 2013 that the U.S. wanted a chemical weapons attack to take place in Syria so they could blame it on Assad. This also should have been taken into account by Trump if he was honestly trying to assess the situation.
And the American people, too. I mean,
right.
Didn't the American people remember the previous allegation against Assad?
I think many of them did. There's probably a lot more people out there that are aware of what's going on than we're aware of, just because mainstream media is not going to give us any inkling. They're going to show the president's polls soaring, and I don't know if they've done any kind of poll or whether or not the public believes the story, but you know that they'll fudge the stats all the time. So I think there's more people onto this than we probably realize, I hope.
I hope so, too. Absolutely.
Well, we're about halfway through. Okay, number eight is this. Assad just didn't have any motive to use chemical weapons because he and the Russians had recently won this huge victory over ISIS and the El Nasser Front in Aleppo. So these guys are close to consolidating a victory. And why would, you know, in all that time that he's fighting the jihadists on the battlefield, Assad never used chemical weapons against them. So why, after this big victory, would he suddenly just randomly decide, hey, I think I'm going to drop some chemical weapons on civilians, knowing full well that the last time such a claim was leveled against them, it brought about threatened airstrikes? Why would he endanger himself in his own position with this wanton attack? He's just got no motive. The people, you know, when you look at a crime, if you're a real detective, you one of the first questions you ask is, who had motive, okay? Who collected insurance on this murder? Who benefited from it? And who benefited was obviously ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Israel. Assad obviously was not the beneficiary. Same thing with 9/11, you know. America didn't benefit, and Muslims didn't benefit. The big beneficiary was Israel. So you look at who benefited, but clearly Assad had no motive to do this.
Exactly. And, of course, the other benefactors are the people who make all this money selling armaments and, you know, Blackwater. They've changed their name, but certainly there's a lot of people making a lot of money, and this has always been the case, that people make a lot of money during warfare because it takes a lot of resources to execute a war.
Yeah, I've heard different figures on how much it'll cost to replace those 59 Tomahawks, but Catherine Austin Fitz is a pretty good lady for figures. She said it was $90 million. I mean, how about using that to fix our roads and home, our infrastructure, you know? I thought that's what Trump was going to be doing.
Yeah, instead of building a wall. I mean, what's that all about?
Well, number nine is, you know, right after the airstrike on the Shayrat Air Base, ISIS launched a new offensive in that region. And so what Trump, in effect, did was he launched an attack in support of the enemies of the Islamic extremists who he said he was going to be fighting as president. So he's supposed to be fighting the jihadists, and he actually launched a flank attack in their support in a battlefield situation. So there's, again, looking at motive, who's got motive. You know, the bad guys had motive for this to be blamed on Assad, but militarily, obviously, this went against what Trump claimed about his own position vis-a-vis a Muslim extremist.
Right. Now, how much influence do you think that his daughter and his son-in-law have with him?
You know, this is coming out more and more. There's more and more posts I've been seeing on Twitter about Jared Kushner. You know, I did a meme, and this is just for fun, okay? It's not meant to be taken seriously, but he was born on January the 10th, 1981, and on March the 20th, 1981, they released The Omen, part three, where, you know, and it's, in the movie poster, they show President of the United States insignia behind him, you know, and you also, obviously, Kushner, standing next to the president. But this is something interesting. It's been pointed out, and I think it's true. There seem to be no interviews of Jared Kushner. It's like, he's senior advisor to the president, but you never see any of the major networks interview the guy. He just stands in the background, watching, and, but he traveled to the Middle East with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he'll be going to the Israel with the president on his, forthcoming trip to Israel. He's a 35-year-old real estate developer. Why is he suddenly the voice of American foreign policy?
Exactly. What are his qualifications? And his father helped finance some of the settlements, there in the Gaza Strip. What gives him the right, except for Trump, allowing him to be the top advisor? I mean, it's ridiculous. Why no outcry over that?
Yeah, it's nepotism. And, what's being pointed out now is apparently, is a major player in, this, group Chabad. And I'm just starting to learn about it, but I guess it's a college campus Zionist organization. And they say it's an arm of Mossad. If that's true, it means the Mossad has an agent standing right next to the president.
Oh,
and you
can
be sure that, our foreign policy is being directed by Israel. And of course, AIPAC has always directed it anyway. And the Rothschilds, and Israel is nothing but the Rothschilds proxy state. And that's why the Balfour Declaration was issued to Lord Walter Rothschild. It's been their game going back to the 19th century, at least.
Sure.
But yeah, I think Kushner is very, very, very much, maybe our real president. It's ironic that he just turned, 35 at the time of the election, and 35 is the age of qualification to be president.
Yikes. Yeah, so you might as well think that Trump is just a figurehead and that Kushner is the real force in the White House.
Even Paul Craig Roberts was commenting that on this, that he seems to be just in the hands of other people. He was commenting on the fact in a recent interview with Julian Charles, Paul Craig Roberts was noting that it's very unusual that a lot of foreign policy statements are now being made by other people besides Trump. Usually it's the president himself who will make these announcements. So it just seems like he's being run at this point, that he's being managed.
Right.
I don't think he's even in charge.
Yeah, one thing that he said, I don't remember where he said this, but he thought that being president would be a lot more difficult than he thought. And, he doesn't seem to be doing anything. I mean, he goes to the so-called Southern White House every weekend, and he's saying, hey, it's a piece of cake. It's no big deal.
Well, maybe that's because he's delegated a lot of these things to people like Kushner. I would think that would be, when I was a kid, they said that the hardest job in the world would be to be president of the United States, and I still pretty much agree with that, unless, of course, you do have, you are just a figurehead, and all the other people are doing the brain work for you.
Right. Amazing.
Well, number 10 on my list, and this is actually a pretty important one, is that Assyria really was storing chemical weapons at this air base, like they said. The last thing you'd want to do is hit it with Tomahawk missiles, because you don't dismantle weapons of mass destruction by blowing them up. If, in fact, there had been sarin gas there, hitting it with Tomahawk missiles would explode the sarin gas into the atmosphere and kill lots of more civilians, which is supposedly what Ivanka and Trump were all so upset about. So didn't they understand that you don't dispose of sarin gas that way? You should dispose of it probably at sea in a very careful manner. You don't blow it up and send it into the atmosphere. So this means either he had really bad advice by very inept military advisors, or the more likely option is they knew darn well there were no chemical weapons at that base, and they were doing it for strategic reasons. As I'm sure you've heard, Israel has also started launching airstrikes on Syria. So they're trying to give it to Assad from every direction right now. The jihadists, the U.S., and Israel combined, they're trying to overwhelm them with military force.
Amazing. Yes, but it was anticipated. I mean, this is what we can anticipate. What happened in Afghanistan, what happened in Libya, what happened in Iraq. I mean, it's kind of part of what they do. They're just taking them out one by one.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, I'm sure most of your listeners have probably seen it, but that famous clip from General Wesley Clark, where he said that in 2001, after 9/11, in 2001, there was already a plan to take out seven nations, including Iraq, Libya, and Syria. And of course, you needed a pretext for each one. So, you know, for Iraq with weapons of mass destruction, and Libya was, you know, Gaddafi being a dictator, and then they had sarin gas, a fake sarin gas attack for Assad and Syria. But yeah, this is part of that dominoes, if you will. You know, they were talking about the domino effect in the Vietnam War, right? It's like we're setting off our own domino effect in the Middle East in these Arab Spring Wars.
Sure. Absolutely. And Trump is doing, as you say, in number 11, Trump is now keeping bad company.
Yeah. That very same day, or hours before he made this decision, Hillary Clinton said that we should, quote, take out Syrian airfields. And so he took Hillary's advice, and he's also doing the same thing that number one and number two neocons in the Congress, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, are doing. Of course, Lindsey Graham said he was now respectful of Trump after the airstrikes, whereas he dissed on him all the time before that. And is doing the same thing as Obama. So all of a sudden, Trump is doing exactly what Obama, Clinton, Lindsey Graham, and McCain would have done in his shoes. And what's the difference? He's become a neocon. Exactly the thing that he said he was opposed to.
Sure. And he certainly has become a neocon. He's following their pattern exactly. And whatever happened to when Clinton and Trump were supposedly debating, what happened to the idea that he said, oh, you know, she should be in jail, or she should be tried for the email scandal, the server scandal? What was that all about? Nothing happened.
Yeah, like a lot of these other promises have just vanished. A lot of really diehard Trump supporters still think he's doing a great job, but people have been listening to this, making memes out of all the changes that have taken place. You know, he's gone. In fact, you know, he said that he was opposed to globalism. Just a couple of days ago, he said, I am a globalist and a nationalist. Now, how long is it before the phrase nationalist just disappears altogether from Trump's vocabulary?
Sure. Probably already gone. All righty. We will be back in 3 minutes. This is Deanna, and our guest today is James Perloff. His website is jamesperloff.com. You mentioned Wesley Clark. And do we all remember the participation and the influence he was at Waco? I mean, he's the guy that that perpetrated or directed Waco back in 1993, and that was just about the time that the government supposedly was looking at the Clinton crimes and trying and maybe going after the Clintons. And then all of a sudden we have Waco, this big, which was distracted everybody, but look what they did there at Waco with the Branch Davidians, and they had people, they had snipers behind the compound, and they had people going in civilian dress. I mean, that was a regular slaughter directed by Wesley Clark. Are you there? Did we lose Jim?
I'm here. I'm sorry. I had my microphone muted. I'm sorry about that.
I do that too. You know, sometimes I'll mute it and I'll forget to turn it back on. I'll be yakking away and nobody can hear me.
Well, that was just, I just gave the equivalent of the Gettysburg Address and I can't bring it back to memory now. But anyway, what what I was going to say was that I appreciated you bringing it up, and I had actually not been aware, because it's so long since I've looked at the Waco incident, that Wesley Clark played a key or the key role in that. And do you believe, Deanna, that he was subsequently rewarded, you know, with these his very elevated Pentagon positions and commander of NATO, partly directly as a result of Waco?
Right. He was number two as far as being in command of that operation. And I believe that anybody that does the things that he did there or, you know, participates in phony war or phony anything are rewarded for their efforts.
Well, how about General Eisenhower with his Rhineland Meadows camp? Rhineland Meadows camp, and then gets to become president of the United States.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, let's see. You know, by the way, we were talking about Trump keeping bad company in this list of 14 reasons why the Syria airstrikes were such a bad idea. And part of that, besides, you know, now he's hanging out with at least on a mental level with Hillary and McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that the mass media suddenly was behind them. And, you know, they've been after him like pit bulls before the election, during and after the election, and with the constant Russia hacking claims. And I was watching CNN on April the 9th after these airstrikes, and I was amazed that the CNN anchor and their commentators were all speaking with this hushed reverence about Donald Trump. And they're saying that he restored America's respect throughout the world because of these airstrikes, right? And I couldn't find that specific clip for my web article, but I did find another one where CNN is talking about how presidential he'd become because of the airstrikes.
Yeah, is that crazy?
CNN.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, CNN. Says, do I have the right channel? Is this really CNN? Okay, we'll be back. It's the top of the hour. We will be back in 3 minutes.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today for the first 2 hours is James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior, available at Amazon. He also wrote The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations, and The American Decline, which I purchased back in 88 and just put all kinds of notes in it, and it's a fabulous book. Anyway, his website is jamesperloff.com. And in the third hour, we're going to be taking calls and listening to what our listeners are thinking about Trump. Okay, so we are on number 11. We were talking about number 11 when we went to the top of the hour break.
Right, and we're talking about that he was now keeping company with us, CNN's pundits and the neocon crowd in Congress. But for number 12... Trump displayed a huge double standard on human rights because he said he was motivated by these photographs of children. Okay, so now you ask, well, what about what our allies are doing? Saudi Arabia has been bombing Yemen for a couple of years now. Even CNN has admitted that millions of people are in danger of starvation. They've dropped bombs on civilian targets. I've even got a clip there of what appears to be a tactical nuclear weapon being dropped in Yemen. We've seen there's footage there of just civilian slaughter. The bombed airports and hospitals, weddings and funerals have been bombed. It's horrendous. And then you take Israel, what they've done to Gaza. They've dropped white phosphorus over Gaza on densely populated civilian areas. That's a chemical weapon. And I've got pictures there of victims and clips. And the thing is, Deanna, that the Yemen bombings and the atrocities, the bombings and white phosphorus over Gaza, this is well documented. It's been going on for years. it wasn't a one-time thing like this fake claim about the sarin gas and Assad. And so why doesn't Trump respond to those victims? Is he doesn't help the victims. He doesn't punish the aggressors. And, of course, in fact, you say we're going to increase military aid to Israel, even though I don't know why they need more military aid, since we've already taken out Iraq and Libya and neutralized Egypt, and then we're taking out Syria now. And why do they need more? Shouldn't they need less military aid? But yet they just acquired more F-35 fighters from us. It's ridiculous. But so it's a huge double standard, claiming he was so concerned about the victims when he's been ignoring these other victims of our aggressive allies.
Exactly. Mark down in Florida just Skyped me, and he said, Brian Williams calls images of U.S. missile launch beautiful. And I'm reading that comment while I'm looking at the photos that you have of all this rubble and the real children mm-hmm. who are victims of U.S. aggression and terrorism.
Yeah, because
it makes me sick.
Those are, even though it's Saudi Arabia and Israel that's carrying out those particular attacks, it's been our weapons. It's the white phosphorus comes from America. And, of course, Saudi Arabia gets its bombs from us and Canada and Britain. But, it's the West doing it through proxy states.
Absolutely. It just, this is just horrible. And the, these photos. Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. And Gaza. You have a statement. This is not Hiroshima. And
Yeah, there's no comparison between the claims about Assad. Even if they were true, there would be no comparison. But of course, the claims were false against Assad anyway, because it's been their agenda to take him down. Well, number 13 was that this is bringing us close to World War III. And, the deeper we get involved in Syria, we know full well that Russia is Syria's ally there. And you and I have talked about false flags before. And all it takes is an incident to draw America into a full-scale war. You know, the Cinco de Mayo being used to get us into the Spanish-American War, the Lusitania, the main pretext for getting us into World War I, the Tonkin Gulf, getting us into Vietnam. All they would need would be a clash between American and Russian forces. They would claim that the Russians did it deliberately as an unprovoked attack, an act of naked aggression by Putin's Air Force upon American soldiers. And then they'd say, well, we have to take punitive measures against Russia. And that could escalate into an actual world war with nuclear weapons. And so getting involved in Syria, as Trump himself said, is a very bad, dangerous idea. Yet he's going contrary to that very advice. But that's the 13th reason I listed, was the fact that he's pulling us closer to World War III. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with North Korea, but now he's got his... I was afraid before I could even publish this article on Syria, he was going to have something going with North Korea.
Which I want to talk about, too. But number 14 is very interesting. And tell us all about these anniversaries.
Yeah, well, you know, 2017, I've been writing about this for a while, but there's a lot of very important anniversaries this year from the New World Order perspective. Now, I don't know how sentimental they are, but this year is the 50th anniversary of the attack on the USS Liberty and the 50th anniversary of the Zionist seizure of Jerusalem. More significantly, the 100th anniversary is we have the 100th anniversary of our entering World War I, the 100th anniversary of the Balfour Declaration, created the State of Israel, the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution, which created the first communist state funded by the Rothschilds. And I count this one, too, as significant. It's the 100th anniversary of the publication of the Schofield Reference Bible. That's significant because that book birthed Christian Zionism,
yes,
without which Israel would not have been created. They needed Christian support. And so they had to change Christian theology and change what the Bible meant in order to get that. But then you've also got the 300th anniversary of the founding of the first Freemasonic Grand Lodge in London. That was 1717. And it's the 500th anniversary of the Catholic-Protestant split, which from the Luciferian perspective was very important to split the Christian church. But if you look at Trump's airstrikes, he did it on April the 6th, and that was exactly to the day that we ended World War One, the 100th anniversary, we ended World War One on April the 6th, 1917. On April the 6th, 2017, Trump struck what might have been the first blow of our entering a third world war. To the day.
And when we entered World War One, it was Good Friday.
Yeah, and when we entered the Iraq War with Purim.
Yes.
It seems that they have reasons for doing what they do. In fact, World War One ended at 11 a.m. on November 11th, 11/11, and people pointed out that 11/11/11, you know, 33 was significant from a Freemasonic perspective. So they do play around with these dates, and as you know, they've had terrorist attacks take place on 3/22, which is, you know, the big skull and bones number. So they do. You know, you can't predict it, but they do seem to actuate events in correlation to numbers that are significant to them.
Wow. Somebody also mentioned Fatima. It's the 100th anniversary of Fatima, May 13th.
Right. And somebody suggested to me, contacted me on my website, that they think that nothing major has been launched against Italy recently, and they think that there might be some kind of a false flag staged against the Vatican, maybe around the time of the Fatima anniversary, in order to make Christians think that this is fulfillment of something, and to help stir up Christian feelings against Muslims. And, you know, of course, there's always been this plot to attack the mosque at the Dome of the Rock, so that they can build a third temple there. That's always been part of the Rothschild plan, is building that Antichrist temple there. And I've kind of just wondered to myself, the pure speculation, that would they perhaps time an attack on the Vatican to coincide with an attack on that mosque, which I think is one of the three holiest sites in Islam, in order to stir up a, you know, world war, and just make tempers flare across the planet between Christians and Muslims.
Sure.
Possible. I don't know. That's just pure speculation. But the Syria, we don't have to speculate on. That's already history.
Sure. And the security at that mosque is, you cannot take the camera in. You can't wear shoes in. You can't, I mean, you literally can't take anything in there as a tourist. And you leave everything out. So security is, and that was back in 99, security was so high. I'm sure that it's much higher now. But that is certainly their plan, is to take out that mosque. Wow. Huh. So, you have a summation here. What does this mean about the Trump presidency?
It means he's betrayed us. And, you know, I looked with favor on some of the initial things he did, like talking to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Oh, right.
About,
yes,
you know,
about
an attack vaccine task force, which is, you know, we've been hiring our hopes in alternative media, recognizing that vaccination is part of the New World Order's population control agenda. Bill Gates, you know, wants to, says the greatest problem the world faces is overpopulation, yet he donates billions and billions to vaccine development. If they make you healthy, aren't they going to increase world population? But obviously they decrease it. And you've written wonderfully on that, by the way, in your book, Screening Sandy Hook. You go into great depth on the history of big pharma and vaccines. I learned a lot from reading that.
Well, thank you. Whatever happened to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? What happened to that task force? Has it gone by the wayside? And I think, too, that somebody mentioned that Trump's 10-year-old son, he might be 11 by now, might be autistic. Mm-hmm. And I note that his wife really is, she's kind of in the background a lot. I kind of wonder about that. It seems like his daughter is really taking the position as first lady, and his wife is probably just, I don't know, she's being a wife and a mother.
Right. It was Ivanka's cheers, not Melania's cheers that allegedly provoked Trump to make his emotional decision to bomb Syria. So you're right. It's like she's the first lady. And the fact that she's married to Jared Kushner, maybe that's correct.
Yeah. Amazing.
But what I spoke about in the article was the long history Trump has to Zionism, and that had been the worrying thing for me all through his candidacy, and this goes way back, but, you know, he's the only American celebrity who ever made a Israeli television campaign commercial for Benjamin Netanyahu, and, you know, you can look that up on YouTube or click on the link for my article. And he also said that during the campaign, he said that America's allies should start paying for their own defense costs, but he specifically exempted Israel from that. And if you go back to, you know, Brother Nathaniel, who I really love, you know, he's a Jewish convert to Christianity, and he did posted a video well over a year before the election. It was called Trump's Deck of Jewish Cards, and he warned in there specifically about two people, Jared Kushner and Carl Icahn, who bailed Trump out when his Trump Entertainment went bankrupt, a Jewish billionaire. Well, now we see Jared Kushner and Carl Icahn are now senior advisor and special advisor to the president, and their only qualifications are that Jared's a real estate guy and Carl Icahn's a corporate raider, but there they are, you know, advising the president, we were warned about by Brother Nathaniel. And then you see Jared, he's raised money for the IDF. He was the owner of the New York Observer, and there's a writer for the Observer who was fired, Philip Weiss. He said he was specifically fired by Kushner because he wrote an article for the Observer which was critical of Israeli occupations. And then first, special assistant to both Kushner and Trump, Abraham Berkowitz, is first cousin to Howard Friedman, former president of AIPAC.
Oh my gosh.
And then Trump's ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, is a hardline, pro-occupation guy. He even lived in an Israeli settlement at one time. And I found this out just, like about 3 days ago. He also was one of the bankruptcy attorneys who handled, Trump's bankruptcy, back in the day. And right. Now he's an ambassador to Israel. And I've also gotten links to a video there that lists the various Zionists who was part of his transition team and his administration. And also he stated that he wants to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And again, that's part of this whole deal about building the third temple. You know, the Antichrist is supposed to rule from there, whether people believe that or not. It's clear that the Luciferians believe in it, and the Bible does predict it. But the fact that Kushner and Trump have a background in real estate, when you start thinking about building a temple, it gives you just a pause to contemplate that, their background versus that scheme. And it's been said, I just saw this yesterday, that Kushner is going to accompany Trump on his forthcoming trip to Israel, and it is believed, it's rumored, that he's going to announce the movement of the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem at that time. And then at his inaugural address, Trump, right after the address was finished, the first benediction was given by an Orthodox rabbi. And it was the first time in history that an Orthodox rabbi ever gave a benediction at a presidential inaugural. And he quoted the Book of Psalms, and he quoted this part, included this part: "By the rivers of Babylon we wept as we remembered Zion. If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, may my right hand forget its skill," unquote. You know, do Zion and Jerusalem have that much relevance to the presidency at the inauguration? And then, I don't know if you saw Trump's Easter message. At his Trump's Easter message, which I'm sure you can find on YouTube, he specifically started off by wishing everyone a happy Passover, and then he talked at some length about, within the time length of the short video, about Jewish people and modern Israel and what a great example it sets for us all. And then he got around to wishing people a happy Easter, but clearly he was putting Jews first, even though I believe they're supposedly only make up 3% of our demographic here in America. He put them ahead of Christians. And so these are all what you might call a long history of clues from Trump that he was in the Zionist camp. But when he helped the Greater Israel project, and I made a meme of him a few days ago wearing a cap that says "Make Greater Israel" instead of "Make America Great." These were all clues that he was in their camp, and what we're seeing now is confirmation. Yes, he's in the Rothschild camp. He's going to do as they say, and talk is cheap. There's a lot of great rhetoric we heard during the campaign, but step by step, that is vanishing as he takes the neocon stance worldwide.
In the first 100 days.
Yeah. He didn't wait to boil the frog. He just kaboom, 59 missiles.
Exactly. Now, somebody in the chat room said that George Soros, who once said that destroying America was his greatest desire, loaned Jared Kushner $250 million. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I've seen that tweet. There's been articles. It's been on Twitter. I forget specifically what the project was, but Jared and his brother received $250 million from Soros as an investment for some project they were involved with. And of course, Kushner has been involved in some very big real estate deals. He purchased 666 Fifth Avenue for a record $1.8 billion a few years ago. That was the biggest real estate deal in history, but that building was simply called 666, and so there have been a lot of Jared Kushner Antichrist jokes going around, but again, quite a coincidence, and not necessarily a significance to it, but yes, I've heard that too. And Soros is supposedly Trump's greatest enemy. It gives you the feeling that these riots, the Not My President riots and the Women's March and the Berkeley riots, which were funded by Soros, if he's connected to Jared Kushner, it looks like he's trying to pressure him. And then the moment Trump became obedient, all that media pressure vanished, and it remains to be seen whether or not they can have these May Day riots that were being predicted by Robert David Steele. He's a former CIA operative officer who's been talking a lot in alt media about forthcoming riots in May funded by Soros. But maybe that's all going to calm down now if Trump is on the right path and they're no longer pushing the anti-Trump narrative so strongly in the mainstream media as they were relentlessly before the Syria airstrikes.
Sure. All righty, we're going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is James Perloff, and his website is jamesperloff.com. Yeah, the other thing, too, that really bothered me was when he increased the military budget. I'm thinking, well, what is that all about? I thought he was, that he wasn't going to do any such thing. That, according to what he said during the campaign, it just didn't seem to make sense. And as you say in your article, in your summation, talk is cheap and actions speak louder than words. What about this tax cut this week? And what about North Korea? I mean, seriously, North Korea is the size of, I'm not sure, I haven't compared it, but, I mean, would North Korea really threaten the United States given what they have seen the United States do to the Middle East? What are they thinking? And to Vietnam? Seriously. Are you there?
Yes. Yes, I'm here. North Korea is it's a big question mark. They had this call of the entire Senate to be briefed on North Korea, so it appears that they're planning something there, and there's different interpretations on it, and now we're talking about a potential future situation, which is so hard to predict. But one thing that's been pointed out is that, like Syria, North Korea doesn't recognize Israel. It's one of the few countries that doesn't, and it's one of the few countries that doesn't have a Rothschild central bank, and maybe that's being factored in here. I've been noticing that the American mainstream media, though, seems to be really trying to scare us. They always have these high-quality images of Kim looking through Jong-un looking through spy glasses watching his missiles being paraded, and pictures of his missiles being launched. And it just seems like they're trying to gear us up with a lot of fear, but I don't know, is that supposed to materialize in a war or something else? There's a very interesting article posted by F. William Engdahl, November of last year. And the title is North Korea is a Pentagon Vassal State. Very interesting. And he says he had a conversation in the 1990s with James Lilly, who was in the CIA for 3 decades and spent time with Bush there. And he said during this private dinner conversation, he quoted Lilly as saying, quote, simply put, at the end of the Cold War, if North Korea didn't exist, we would have had to create it as an excuse to keep the 7th Fleet in the region, unquote. And Engdahl points out that Kim was actually educated in Europe, in Switzerland, from 91 to 2000, and he believes that he developed contacts with the Western intelligence then, and perhaps what Kim is really doing is serving as an excuse or pretext for our military buildup. And especially, there's some talk of this now that perhaps the real target isn't Kim, but to increase our military buildup in the China. Pacific to surround Asia and Russia better. But I don't know. I'm not sure. Again, it's speculation, but he's a pretty informed source. But what's your take, Deanna? What have you been thinking about North Korea?
Well, I think Engdahl is absolutely right about so many things. I've read a lot of his books. And he's terrific, and his perceptions are very accurate. And definitely, I did not know that about the Korean leader. But of course, that makes perfect sense, because I just couldn't fathom why this little country would be making, supposedly, threats against the United States. And obviously, all these missiles that he launches all fizzle into nothing. And but certainly, I mean, they want U.S. military presence in that part of the world, and they have to have a reason to be there. And North Korea, if he's just an agent state, that would make perfect sense.
You know, there's a bit of history that goes back to the claim that they are an agent state, and this goes deep into history, but the whole division of North and South Korea, you know, that was actually an American idea.
Sure.
If you go back during World War II, Korea had been a colony of Japan, and then in 1944, Foreign Affairs, the Journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, published an article called Korea in the Post-War World, and they proposed that Korea should be divided after the war into a trusteeship. And that's what with the victorious powers as trustees. And that was worked out in a deal between Harry Hopkins and Stalin in a private meeting in Russia.
Oh, yes. All righty, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is James Perloff, and his website is jamesperloff.com. And you talk about, on your website, about Hillary, and that perhaps there was a reason why the New World Order perpetrators wanted Trump instead. And I remember that there were some machinations back in 2008 where she acquiesced and allowed Obama to come in. And I believe that was so that he could get Obamacare going. And she had attempted to do that when she was first lady. And so I think that she really almost was guaranteed that she would be president in 2016, November of 2016. Mm-hmm. And she was so sure that she was going to win. I guess she had a fit. Absolutely threw fit when she didn't.
You know, that might have been the original game plan, was to have her be president. In fact, I was noting that there was this attempt to place women in the chief positions of power around the globe. So you saw Janet Yellen as the first female head of the Fed, and Christine Lagarde heading up the IMF, and Angela Merkel heading up the EU for all practical purposes as Chancellor of Germany, and then Theresa May coming in as Prime Minister of Britain, and it just seemed like it was Hillary's turn next.
Sure.
For some reason, they think that women are more credible than men. That's why they have so many female news anchors now. But apparently they decided that alt media had made the American public unwilling to continue with interventionist wars. So I'm just guessing that although they liked Hillary and probably had wanted her there originally, they felt that somebody who looked like a populist would be bring renewed vigor for Middle East wars. Because obviously Trump has the patriots and the veterans and the military who do like him a whole lot better than Hillary, and they're much more willing to support wars from him than Hillary. And I think that they just felt he was probably a better candidate, more suitable to rally the troops and the people behind more wars. Although obviously people are quickly catching on, those who are aware of the deep state.
Sure. Hillary had such disdain for the military, even though, she wanted to manipulate, exploit them. She doesn't have a lot of respect for anybody. But it's very interesting. You also have a list about the things that Donald Trump said he was going to do. Initially, he said, lock her up. And now he's saying she's been through enough. He's done such a flip-flop. Obamacare. That just went by the wayside. And they haven't done anything. He said NATO should be obsolete. Now he's saying they're indispensable. He's just done a flip-flop here.
Yeah, and they said that he's lost about half his support in alternative media. And again, I think this comes down to the fact that his supporters during the campaign basically were in two camps. There were those of us who watched him guardedly, who didn't want Hillary in, but knew about his Zionist connections. And we were aware that 9/11 was not what the government told us. But he's got another group of followers who continue to support him. I can see it on Twitter. And they don't seem to be aware that 9/11 was an inside job. They think that they don't understand that the most terrorist events are actually false flags orchestrated by intelligence agencies, not, jihadists. And they still think that Israel is our greatest ally in the Middle East and that our wars are being fought for freedom and democracy. And so that group, they're good people. They're patriots. A lot of them are Christians, but educated students of the deep state and the Zionist influence on the White House that's been going on for so many decades, as proxies of AIPAC being the proxy of the Rothschilds.
Which is crazy. I mean, when you talk about, Christians supporting Trump or supporting any war, it always amazes me that Christians are sometimes the very first people who will say, yeah, let's go into Iraq. Let's go bomb those people. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, what is wrong with you? This is not Christianity. This is, well, as you said before, it's with the Bible. When that Bible replaced a lot of the thoughts, a lot of the dogma, the Christian dogma, the Scofield Bible. I mean, it just made a lot of people, encouraged a lot of people to adopt Christian Zionism. And I mean, there are a lot of churches who are so Zionistic. They take field trips to Israel and they do all of these things for Israel. And I'm thinking, what is wrong with you people? And when you think of the number of Jews in the country and worldwide, and Mark gave me some figures just a little bit ago, that they represent 0.2% of the world's population worldwide, and in this country they represent 1.7%. Why? What about the rest of us? What about the 98.3%? What about our needs? What about the needs of the regular people? Go ahead.
Oh, this has been going on, of course, for almost two millennia, with Talmudic Jews being expelled from nations 109 times, and Brother Nathaniel, who is himself Jewish born and raised, has pointed out very clearly they were not expelled due to anti-Semitism. They expelled because of the things they did. And all you have to do is look in the Talmud and see what it says about how you can kill a Gentile, how you can steal from a Gentile, how you can lie to a Gentile. And, you know, when the Talmud talks about Jesus boiling in hell and excrement for all eternity and how his mother Mary was a whore, you really have to wonder how these Christian churches can support, talk about Judeo-Christianity and support Israel, which is run on this Talmudism and Kabbalism that's completely alien to Christian beliefs. But it was a Scofield reference Bible, and on my website, I do have an extensive history of Christian Zionism there, especially the Scofield reference Bible. You know, Theodore Herzl was the man who the Rothschild appointed to run those Zionist congresses starting in 1897. And in January of 1904, he went to the Pope and asked for the Pope's blessing on, you know, the Jews taking over Palestine or creating a homeland there. And the Pope politely told him no. And once that happened, once the Zionists knew that they needed Christian support if they're going to take over Palestine. Since the Catholics said no, they had to go for the Protestants. So it was right after that, 1904, that Scofield was sent to England, and he made an arrangement right there with Oxford University Press, which, you know, had strong Zionist ownership, to publish the Scofield Reference Bible, even though, by the way, the guy, he said it was Dr. Scofield, he had no doctorate, you know. He was just a con man from Kansas politics, you know, become a preacher with a lot of backing after his crimes were somehow adjudicated secretly. Became a pastor, and then he went up to New York and became a member of the exclusive Lotos Club, which was a club where the elite hung out, the Zionists hung out, where normally a fundamentalist preacher would be laughed at, but he got backing to go to England and publish that Bible. And you can read all about it, but it was the purpose of it was, and he put his reference notes right on the Bible's pages, whereas previous Bible expositors and commentators would always write a separate commentary. But no, Scofield arrogantly put his comments right on the Bible's pages, so people would confuse his remarks with the Bible itself, right? And what he did was, the basic purpose of that Bible was to make people think that the Bible should be interpreted in such a way as that God was commanding a third return of the Jews to Palestine. It was all about Rothschild's Zionist plan. That was why that Bible was disseminated. Millions of copies produced by Oxford University Press. And so that was really the birthing of Christian Zionism, timed to coincide in 1917 with the Balfour Declaration, so that Christians would be duped into thinking that the Balfour Declaration was somehow a fulfillment of biblical prophecy, you know, which it's not. This is not the God, Israel is not the godly rebirthing of ancient Israel, as so many Christians think. It is a Rothschild proxy state, and the only reason they called it Israel, you know, they were originally going to call it Zion or the Jewish state, they called it Israel to dupe Christians into thinking this was the ancient Israel reborn, and we have to support it because, you know, this is where we got our Bible from. This is all false. This has all been highly financed for subversive political and Luciferian motives.
Sure, and even the term Judeo-Christian was employed after World War II. I mean, that they're oxymoron here. Judeo-Christian is, I mean, who thought that term up? But it was designed in order to garner support for Israel and whatever, I hate to call it Israel, the Israeli state, because absolutely, the people that are going there, the Jews that call themselves Jews, have no connection genetically to Palestine. Absolutely none.
Right, they're of Khazarian descent, most of them. And of course, if you look at the Bible, if people want to be biblical, God didn't even allow the Hebrews who came up from Egypt with Moses to enter the land due to their lack of faith. And do you think that the people who live there now are more faithful? That this was somehow a move of God? You know, Tel Aviv has been voted the most gay-friendly city in the entire world by the gays themselves. So it's not a godly rebirthing of ancient Israel at all.
And they have a very high abortion rate, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's nothing godly about modern Israel. It's Luciferian. And actually, I have to tell you, there was a church I attended for a while. I finally had to leave it because it was so pro-Israel And one day they even had us pretend we were a synagogue, believe it or not, and celebrate Purim. They had a Messianic Jew come in. We celebrated. We're supposed to celebrate Purim. They handed out noisemakers and said, we're going to act just like they do in the synagogues to show our solidarity with the Jewish community. But there's nobody from the Jewish community to even observe the solidarity. And I just stood there and shook my head. But I finally had to leave. Not only was it this church Zionized, like so many of the evangelical churches are, but also they had patriotism on steroids, just approving of all these wars in the Middle East and how for freedom and democracy, and they bought the whole nine yards. And the only reason that they're encouraging patriotism among these American churches is because it supports Israel's, the Greater Israel agenda. Now, once they've got Greater Israel, if we take out Iran, finish Syria and Iran, they'll be done with the American churches. We don't need you anymore, and that's when the axe will fall on the American churches, and they'll have brought it upon themselves through the support of this Luciferian state. And I had to leave that church. And there's so many churches like it. But they're actually preaching Luciferian doctrine from the pulpit. They're not doing so intentionally. They think it's the word of God somehow. But the churches, the seminaries, and the Christian publishing houses have all been taken over, amongst the evangelical community. So I actually have been attending an Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox church. And that's something else I have to bring up. One more point about Syria is that Syria, Assad is the protector of Christian churches there. And, you know, the Bible says in the book of Acts that the Christians were first called Christians in Antioch, which is in Syria. They have a continuous history of Christianity in Syria. That's one reason why the Rothschilds and the Zionists hate it so much, is because of the Christian presence there that goes back to millennia. And I also say one reason why they hate Russia so much is because they have an enormous Orthodox revival there. You know, the Orthodox split from the Catholics about 1000 AD when they were excommunicated because they wouldn't accept the Pope's exclusive authority. Because up until then, it had always been councils meeting. You know, ecumenical councils would meet, not just one man's authority. Well, what happened was, of course, the West got the Vatican's version of Christianity, and then when the Lutherans split off for some pretty good reasons 500 years later, then the Protestants themselves splintered into 1,000 pieces, and then they got captured by Zionism. No, but the Eastern Orthodox, they've remained true to the faith. They still worship as the early Christians did, and they've never been infected with modernism or Christian Zionism or the type of corruptions we see that have, through infiltration, has permeated the Vatican to such a large extent in recent years. So, but that's one reason why there's so against Russia, is because of the rebuilt 26,000 churches. And, of course, the whole Bolshevik Revolution, you know, they murdered 300,000 Orthodox priests and destroyed 60,000 churches. Satan knows who his enemies are. And they've been after the Orthodox Church for a long time, and I really feel that this animosity right now towards Syria and towards Russia is fueled for a number of reasons, but one of them is the predominance of Christianity in Russia today, and the ancient tradition of Christianity being protected by Assad there. He's the protector of the churches, but if ISIS and Al-Qaeda take over, you know, they will slaughter the Christians there, that's for sure.
Indeed. And of course, those two entities were created by the Mossad and the CIA. Mm-hmm. So that is amazing. Well, you know, even Jesus Christ said, he calls the Jews the synagogue of Satan. Mm-hmm. I don't understand people. People don't read the Bible. They don't read scripture, or they just go and listen to their ministers or what? I don't get it.
Yeah, they've been brainwashed. It's the old big lie phenomena. But you know, when you're taught that in seminary, and then your pastor preaches it every day. But they're, preaching this return. We're going to go through another dispensation, and we're going to return to a Jewish age of Jewish sacrifices, and the temple will be rebuilt, and Jesus will rule from a temple in Jerusalem. Now, Jesus said, always rejected being an earthly king. It's not in his character at all. And he said that the temple would be destroyed. He didn't say it was going to be built up again. And he said, when I come again, don't believe anyone who says I'm out in the desert in the inner room. So what are they're preaching? The preachers are going to be in the inner rooms of the rebuilt temple, you know? It's like, it's so contrary to what Jesus said and to his entire character. But that's what's coming out of the churches. And it's really, I can no longer affiliate myself with that, even though many people, I just want to say this, that many people have had very positive experiences in those churches. I mean, in terms of a personal coming to Christ, character change I did myself. And I want to speak, you know, positively of Catholics and Protestants worldwide who are faithful Christians, just validate that, yes, their spiritual experience is valid. But at the same time, especially over this past century, the Vatican has been penetrated and infiltrated, and the Protestant Church has been taken over by modernism and Zionism. So they're not that you wouldn't recognize, the Christians from the 19th century wouldn't recognize the churches for the most part if they saw them today.
Well, you also have to recognize that the people actually took over the theological seminary. Oh, we have a three-minute break. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest for the first 2 hours today has been James Perloff. He is the author of Truth is a Lonely Warrior. And back in 1988, he published The Shadows of Power, The Council on Foreign Relations, and The American Decline. His website is jamesperloff.com. And you were talking about the destruction of Christianity and all the Christian churches in Russia. None of the synagogues were ever destroyed. None of the synagogues anywhere have ever been destroyed, which tells you a lot about the objectives of the military power when they go into a country. And you talked also, mentioned the infiltration of the Catholic Church, and certainly I think that has a lot to do with some of the things that we hear about priests, which is always on the front page, it seems, with the pedophilia and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's outside of Catholicism, it's even far worse in the truly Luciferian political circles. But I'm reminded that Bella Dodd, the communist who left the Communist Party, said that in her era, just decades ago, that the communists were ordered to infiltrate the Catholic Church and become priests and monsignors to rise up. And I think that the Catholic Church had been a force for good. And they certainly had problems over the years, the selling of indulgences that motivated Martin Luther to protest. But I think especially over the past century, there's been a lot of infiltration, Freemasonic infiltration. Certainly Bella Dodd affirmed those communist infiltration. If you read the Protocols of Zion, they talk about not destroying the Vatican, but gnawing through it. And sure. I think that's what they've been trying to do.
And I think they do use infiltration rather than destruction, because they have, well, I mean, when you look at the worldwide Catholic community, of course you wouldn't want to destroy it. You have more influence if you can just infiltrate and then disseminate whatever you want to do, which is, that's how they operate. They infiltrate.
Right, you can't destroy man's spiritual nature. You can't wipe out the church altogether. They tried to do that in Russia. It actually didn't work. So, yeah, infiltration is probably much more effective than outright frontal attack.
Right. And you know, there was we talked also about who was financing these seminaries. And you mentioned right before we went to the break that definitely Rockefeller and there were some other people that were funding the seminaries. You had the Tappans with New York merchants. You had Rockefeller who established the University of Chicago Divinity School. Mm-hmm. I mean, are we really going to and then there was McCormick Theological Seminary. So you really have to question what these ministers have been taught. And most of them do go to a school, they go to a seminary and receive their instruction, and that's what they hand out.
You know, the Rothschilds have always liked to fund both sides of a war, and there was a war in the early 20th century called the fundamentalist modernist split, and the modernists were saying that they were coming out of places like Union Theological Seminary. The modernists were funded by the Rockefellers. And the Rothschilds through the Scofield Reference Bible actually funded the fundamentalists. So that's
sure.
Again, even the theological war was funded by both sides. And so
sure,
it takes some discernment to get above that. Yeah.
Well, thank you so very much for being on the program today. We always have such a good conversation. So
yeah,
thank you so
pretty
much.
Deep stuff. Yes. Thank you, Deanna. Yes.
Okay, thanks.
And
bye-bye.
Buy Deanna's books, especially her series, The Ruling Elite. You'll never find a better history of the 19th and 20th centuries.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. That's kind of you. All righty. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and today is, callers are welcome. It's an open line. Feel free to call in and talk about Trump, talk about anything that we've talked about in previous programs, or initiate a new subject. It's up to you. And that telephone number is 800-313-9443. And I'm going to have our producer play an audio clip that I think you will really enjoy. Mr. Producer, do you have that audio clip ready to roll?
I am deeply honored to speak with you tonight as the World Jewish Congress gathers in New York City with the leaders from across the world. First, I want to thank Ronald Lauder, not only for his many years of friendship, and he truly has been my good friend. He even predicted early that I was going to win the presidency, but also for his leadership of this organization. He's done a fantastic job. Today we're reminded of this organization's long and heroic history fighting for the Jewish people. Your brave leaders warned the world of the planned atrocities that sought to extinguish an entire people. On Yom HaShoah, we look back at the darkest chapter of human history. We mourn, we remember, we pray, and we pledge, never again, I say it, never again. The mind cannot fathom the pain, the horror, and the loss. 6 million Jews, two-thirds of the Jews in Europe, murdered by the Nazi genocide. They were murdered by an evil that words cannot describe and that the human heart cannot bear. On this Holocaust Remembrance Day, we tell the stories of the fathers, mothers, and children whose lives were extinguished and whose love was torn from this earth. We also tell the stories of courage in the face of death, humanity, in the face of barbarity, and the unbreakable spirit of the Jewish people. Today, only decades removed from the Holocaust, we see a great nation risen from the desert, and we see a proud Star of David waving above the State of Israel. That star is a symbol of Jewish perseverance. It's a monument to unyielding strength. We recall the famous words attributed to Theodor Herzl. If you will it, it is no dream. If you will it, it is no dream. Jews across the world have proved the truth of these words day after day. In the memory of those who lost, we renew our commitment and our determination not to disregard the warnings of our own times. We must stamp out prejudice and anti-Semitism everywhere it is found. We must defeat terrorism, and we must not ignore the threats of a regime that talks openly of Israel's destruction. We cannot let that ever even be thought of. To all of you tonight who have come from around the world, let it be known, America stands strong with the State of Israel. The meaning of that state for so many is captured by the words of a German Jewish musician. Escaping Germany before 1937, he settled in the ancient land of Israel. Sometime later, he received a visit from a British official who found him living in a hut with only his piano for company. The official recognized the musician, and he said, "This must be a terrible change for you." The musician looked back at him and replied, "It is a change from hell to heaven." Many of you here today help fulfill the same dream, the dream of Israel for millions, a dream that burned in the hearts of oppressed and fallen, and which now draws the breath of life from a joyous people each and every day. Thank you for your leadership, for your service, and for your vision of a world that is a more free, just, and peaceful place for all of God's people. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Okay. Now, that was within the last month that he talked to the World Jewish Congress. Okay, we do have some callers, and if you would like to put your two cents in, feel free to call 800-313-9443. And we have Mike in Kentucky. Mike?
Well, good evening, and I don't want to jump tracks too far. That was Donald Trump at the World Jewish Congress, huh?
Right.
Non-surprising, I would say. He's so surrounded by Zionists that I don't know if the state of Israel is a vassal state of the U.S. or the U.S. is now a vassal state of Israel. That's probably the only debate at this point. But or the state of Israel, I like to point out, you know.
The Israeli state, yeah.
Well, something like that. Yeah, the Israelis is what they call themselves. They do not call themselves Israelites. That's a biblical term, and they will tell you that if you write their government. So a lot of people trying to say that they're Israelites are connected back somehow. They can't prove it. I mean, you know, there's no way to prove it. Genealogies were destroyed in the Roman siege, along with whatever remnants was the elements of the temple. But I wasn't calling to talk about that. The elements were destroyed with fervent heat, weren't they, in heavens and earth? Anyway, we're coming up in the end of Autism Awareness Month. I just got into a little bit of an argument with an epidemiologist, and it caused me to stumble across some stuff. And I have to wonder if you've looked into and you've heard about the ketosis diet for epileptic seizures and how that seems to help a lot of people. I don't know if you've heard of that, but there's some scientific papers, dietary approaches to epileptic treatment. You can find them on the National Institutes for Health. I have to wonder if that strategy would not also help with some of what I see as seizure-like disorders in a lot of these autistic children. But it does seem like the medical community has been so polluted from this monster big pharma,
including the National Institute of Health. I mean,
that's an ABC agency. That's a sneaky way to find out that this might help autism is that they've published it under epilepsy. You know, that might be a...
Sure. I don't know, but I don't trust anything that comes from them unless, you know, I have verification from some other source.
Ketogenic and Atkins diets are also compared in this one study that I was stumbled across. They call it the KD or ketogenic diet, but I had stumbled across another nice young Jewish boy, Dr. Hyman, Mark Hyman, who
published a
book on why current thinking about autism is completely wrong, and I think he's in the right direction, I think, looking at epigenomic factors, and they can be reversed.
You know? I don't know if it's the same guy that was collaborating with the Clintons when they were talking about psychiatric issues in the late...
Well, it looks like he's had a paradigm shift with this article here that I stumbled across. I think it's in 2013 because he's tooting the horn about how this can't be explained genetically. That's why Kenneth Stennis, epidemiologist, is saying it's all bullcrap. And this guy's saying what I'm essentially saying is that a lot of these mutagenic chemicals that we've been exposed to, and of course the chip, pop, and pizza diet, is depleting youngsters of essential fatty acids and nutrients that they need for development, and it causes inflammation in the brain. And that's one of the things, that's one of the reasons I think this ketosis diet helps, is it reduces inflammation by getting rid of the sugars out of the diet, perhaps.
Yeah, but I mean, I wondered if you'd looked
at any of this. Still
horrible.
Autism Awareness Month. Yeah.
I really haven't. I haven't looked at the things there at the American Institute of, or the National Institute of Health. But I think moderation in all things, I think using natural things like use butter instead of margarine, use things that are natural. But
he's talking about the rates of skyrocketing antipsychotics in children, and I'm like, he's had some kind of an epiphany, I think, on this. It looks like on this article, drhyman.com. But yeah, he's tainted from his past. I'm not gonna. Yeah, it's why current thinking about autism is completely wrong. And it's had 96,000 views since he published.
Does he mention vaccines?
I've skimmed the article, but I didn't see anything on that. But he's stressing improved nutrition, reduce inflammation, heal the gut, which you don't hear people talk about either. Detoxify. This should all sound familiar. He says. Ultra
Those
wellness.
Those are all good things. All good
he's
things.
He's calling his gimmick
but,
ultra wellness.
Huh.
But,
and those are all good things.
Yeah, gluten-free diet. He's had some kind of a paradigm shift. Anyway,
well, the National Institute of Health has to publish some things that sound reasonable, or people are not going to believe them. But to leave out vaccines as a contributing factor.
I am talking about two different articles here, and I have to wonder about these strategies. At least initially, the dietary approaches to the epilepsy called the ketogenic diet.
Okay.
May initially help as you phase off of these meds. I think summertime is a great time to try to phase off a lot of the medicines to restart.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people do this as a strategy so that they can try to curb the effects of stunting of growth that a lot of these medicines have. They stunt children's growth. But
sure.
I don't want to take up a lot of your time, but, it's the last of Autism Awareness Month, and this is a pandemic. It's headed toward like 1 in 3 children
are going to
be on the spectrum. So
right.
It's pretty important. It's national security level stuff, I'm afraid, because we can't afford it. All right.
Sure.
Have a good one.
Well, thank you, Mike.
All right.
All righty. Let's take John in Texas. Do we have John in Texas?
Speak to Mr. Perloff.
Pardon me?
Oh, can you hear
me? Yes, John. Welcome.
I would like to ask Mr. Perloff a question.
Well, he was only with us for 2 hours, so we're just taking
John,
phone calls.
All right. I want to ask you about, Bombard's body language?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
It's on a YouTube channel. She's an expert in reading people's body language. And,
I think that's really important too. Body language is very important.
Well, she did a study of Trump after he did the missile strike on Syria, and there was some indication of two things. With one of there was some indication of deception. Another thing is, when he left the podium, he seemed to be a very unhappy man. He seemed to be, his shoulders were slumping, and he was like he was dejected about something.
That's quite possible.
Hmm.
Because it certainly goes against what he was talking about before. And I mean, you can't do a flip flop like that without some sort of reason or without some sort of encouragement from some powers that be that you're caving into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think body language is very significant.
I consulted with somebody else. The reason he, someone who was not surprised about it, he thinks that, coming to face reality. It was somebody that seems to think that doubting was possible.
Sure.
I mean, not just his modus, but his confidence.
Sure. There's sure a lot of static on your line, John.
It's deep. I don't know. It may be some interference with the tower.
Oh, okay. All righty. Well, thank you for bringing that to our attention. It's very interesting.
Okay. What specifically he thinks that he is unhappy because it has not gone as he had anticipated. He has not been able to do what he thought he was going to do. Is this an
I don't think he thought he was going to do any of those things. I think that he just told us he was going to do those things.
Would he be despondent about?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he just had a bad lunch or something. I don't know. But, I mean, back in November, I did a couple of programs about Trump. And, yes, I did vote for him as a way of rejecting Hillary. But the minute I did, I thought, well, this is going to be very interesting because I had looked at his background, looked at his – anybody that has done – business in Manhattan could not successfully participate in business in Manhattan unless they were very friendly with the Jews. So, and when you look at his family makeup, I'm not surprised at the things that have happened. So I don't know. But anyway, thanks so much for your phone call, John. Okay, let's take Sarah Russ on the line. Yes, no?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Russ, welcome.
Thank you, dear. So much for playing the little part of the interview recently, last Tuesday of this week, where President Trump spoke so highly. And also, I'd like to note in that speech, he mentioned specifically Elie Wiesel, and he noted him as an eloquent witness for the suffering of the Jewish people. And he went on to say that anyone who questions that 6 million Jews were slaughtered by the Nazis is guilty as an accomplice to these murders.
Yeah.
And I would like to say also, for people like me who love Donald Trump, we have a place we can go today. One day a week we can't go there. Today is a good day to visit the Holocaust Museum, but the other 6 days of the week we can go right here on RBN to Jimmy Kelso. And anything you want to hear, you will never hear a bad word about the President of the United States, Donald Trump, the greatest friend ever to the Jewish people and to the state of Israel. And that when people say he hasn't kept his promises, he promised.
He just didn't promise the American people. He made promises that we're probably not aware of. And unfortunately, we are going to have the consequences of those promises that he made to other people. And they certainly aren't in the best interest of the American people. Okay, Steve in California, but he dropped. Okay. All right, if you want to weigh in on this conversation or weigh in on what Trump said in his speech, feel free to call into the program at 800-313-9443. Now, as I mentioned, back in November of last year, shortly after the election, I did do programs about Trump. I also, there's a very long list of the things that we talked about. And the Jerusalem Post just recently, Trump said that he proclaims May as Jewish Heritage Month. And he was talking in that, in his speech before the World Jewish Congress. He was talking, we have a break. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and I've got a 1 minute clip, and then we're going to take another caller. This is something that Jim Perloff mentioned when Trump made this this 1 minute advertisement on TV for Netanyahu. So let's have that clip, and then we'll take some more calls.
My name is Donald Trump, and I'm a big fan of Israel. And frankly, a strong prime minister is a strong Israel. And you truly have a great prime minister. In Benjamin Netanyahu, there's nobody like him. He's a winner. He's highly respected. He's highly thought of by all. And people really do have great, great respect for what's happened in Israel. So vote for Benjamin. Terrific guy. Terrific leader. Great for Israel.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Okay, let's take Mark in Florida. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, Deanna. I heard James was wonderful, as usual, and I heard him talk about the 666 on top of it's called the Tishman Building, or it was. And when I used to drive a taxi in New York City, this building had the number 666 lit up in red letters.
Ooh.
And this was the only address in all of Manhattan that was lit up in red letters, 6 foot tall, 666. So for now his son-in-law to buy this for whatever it was, $1.8 billion, I find it most interesting that that is the building they buy. And
wow.
It's right on Fifth Avenue. I mean, you can't miss it. I mean, I got the heebie-jeebies every time. I just couldn't believe that the audacity that they would put this right in the middle of Manhattan on top of the building. It just, and another thing, you know, Trump, I'm brought up in New York and I know all about Trump. And one of the things that he did when he put up Trump Tower was tear down, there's many things he did, but just one, he tore down the Bonwit Teller building, and there were two, wonderful pieces of artwork that the Metropolitan Museum wanted, and he didn't. He let them like smash instead of giving them to the Metropolitan Museum. It was cheaper for him to do this. So it's of a historic value. He just didn't care to do anything. So it's. I mean, there's a litany of what Trump has done, and as you said so aptly. For anybody to play the game of real estate in the New York market to the level that he and his family did, you have to be in bed with the Jews, or else you won't get above selling a just a regular home type of thing. It's they run the show in Manhattan. Now they of course run the show in this country and most of this world through their central bank. So it's and they're right out in our face about it. You know, as I'm saying, going back to my initial thing, 666 in big red letters.
Wow.
It's just, so what do we do? You know, we've Jesus supposedly just tried with love and, you know, he went into the temple a few days before and called the money changers, and then he's nailed to a cross within a few days by these same people. And, people want, we have a major problem here. And to me, it's, as I said last week, it's a life extinguishing problem. These people are going to cause the extinction of our species. So what do we do about them? You know, we're talking a lot, and I understand, yes, we have to edify and spread the message out as best we can, but most people don't want to know, and they're on psychotic drugs, and they're drunks, and this, and distractions, you know, all the seven deadly sins, which, of course, the Jews all run, all the pornography, and the gambling, and the drugs, and all this, for all this, this TV distractions, and da-da-da-da-da. It's, but we, you know, I believe still it has to be done with love. And, you know, maybe, but, you know, perhaps quarantine them on, give them Israel and build a big wall around it and let them be. So it's, we're in a desperate, desperate situation, and we're on the brink of what it seems World War III. And, you know, 100 years ago on May 13th, Our Lady, Blessed Virgin Mary, appeared at Fatima. And
could you hold that thought?
Sure.
We're going to a break. Please feel free to stay over. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we're talking to Mark in Florida.
Yes, so you. I'd like to say a few, just a couple other things that, as you know, I was brought up Roman Catholic, went to the oldest Catholic high school in the United States, and even though I fell out of it by the time I was like 8 or so years old, what we have here is the Pope now, Pope Francis, the one before Pope Francis was Pope Benedict XVI. He was the first pope to resign in office since Pope Gregory the 12th in 1415. The popes always die in office. So this
that's right.
This is 598 years. And then we get Pope Francis. And who is he? He is the first Jesuit that became pope. This is a fait accompli. This is complete takeover of the Catholicism, the Catholic Church of this world. Not that it wasn't even taken over before this from, you know, Vatican II. You can go on and on, but since the Rothschilds got control of their money, whatever it was, in 1800 and something, early 1800s. But you have, now it's over. I mean, every sign you see in every different way, including going back to Fatima, it's still, I still have a reverence for Blessed Virgin Mary. And it's in the Fatima, the third secret of Fatima was never said, never put out correctly. It was a total cover-up. And it's going to be the 100th anniversary of the Blessed Virgin Mary appearing in Fatima, Portugal on May 13th, 1917. And subsequently every month until, for 5 months, until October 13th, 1917, when like upwards of 100,000 people saw what it was called the miracle of the sun. And so...
Maybe, S-U-N or S-O-N?
What's that?
S-U-N or S-O-N?
S-U-N. It's called Miracle of the Sun. And
okay.
It was, you know, a lot of, whether atheist types or Jewish types, whatever call it, you know, mass amnesia or mass, I just lost the word. But it was a phenomenon that, many of these 100,000 that were there saw just strange things happening, which is exactly what Blessed Virgin Mary said would happen. Now, you know, there is, to me, I actually say prayers every day or to Blessed Virgin Mary to be grateful for everything that I have, and but to please reappear. Because, I mean, if whatever it is, to reappear, and we need, like, divine intervention. I know it sounds strange, but we are in really, really extremely perilous times. And
well, when you consider the percentage of Jews in the world, which you so nicely sent me during when James was on, I mean, what are the figures? 1.7?
It's 0.2% of the world's population. Otherwise, exactly 1 in 500 people are Jewish. And so, you know, go on TV and watch Wolf Blitzer interview David Brooks and another Jew, and so you have 1,000 times 1,000 times 1,000.
Right.
It's 1 in a trillion chance to see 3 Jews on TV debating nothing. And if you have 4 of them, it's 1 in a quadrillion chance for this kind of thing to happen. People, or if you just have 2 of them together, it's 1 in a million chance. People just don't, and it's, you turn on TV now and just take a look at any channel almost. Any news channel, and you'll see the same thing. It was sort of like what you said with Brian Williams, and I didn't see it, but I saw it later on social media. You know, he called, and I couldn't believe it. This is how far we have come for this POS to be calling us lobbing 59 cruise missiles beautiful. It's beautiful.
Right. Is that amazing? Amazing.
If I didn't know better, it seems like it's demonic beyond demonic. And it just, I don't know how more strange. And every day I wake up and it gets stranger. And
sure.
And yet, you know, and bless you once again for all you do to try to bring the truth and good people on your show and put it out and have freedom and RBN for having freedom of speech left. It's just, you know, I just try to point these things out that are strange. Like going back to the first thing, it unnerved me every time. And I couldn't help but look at the 666 in big red 6-foot letters on top of the Titian building. The only one.
Yeah,
in the
6-foot letters. My gosh. I mean, that is right in your face. But you know, that's how they are. They're right in your face. I mean, like they passed the Muhide laws back in when, 91? I mean, they passed them. And I mean, that is the law of the land. I mean, all the things that they do that are so obvious, and yet it's like so many people are so distracted by things. Now, in his talk, in Trump's talk before the World Jewish Congress, he referred to Holocaust. And one of the people that I get email from, his name is Philip, and he said that there are some real fire ritual Holocausts, and he counted them. He named 7 of them, and I think there are quite a few more. But when you consider the 7, and I'm going to read them off, Pearl Harbor, 1941, and he says, this is counted as a false flag Holocaust, as Roosevelt effectively invited the Japanese to bomb his ships. He knew that they were coming, and he purposefully did not defend them from the pending attack. In fact, Roosevelt and Churchill monitored the Japanese from the time they left Japan until right. They had gotten to Pearl Harbor. Now that is a Holocaust. When you consider the ships and the damage that was done, and, well, it was fire, death by fire.
And the brand new aircraft carriers that weren't there.
Exactly, because they had moved them over into, they had moved them elsewhere so that yep. they could be used in Europe. Because they knew that by getting Japan into the war, that would then allow the United States to enter the European theater of war, which is what they wanted to do to begin with. And the reason was because Japan and Germany had an alliance.
Yep. It's you know, and you see them dropping the atomic bombs.
And, oh, gosh.
You know, it on Hiroshima and then Nagasaki. And let it be known that Nagasaki was by far the most Christian city in all of Japan.
Yes.
So, and this was yes. not Truman's choice. Truman just said, go ahead and do it. It was,
yeah.
It was somebody else's choice to drop it. On, you know, maybe St. Mary's Church was ground zero for that, dropping that bomb. There's a lot of excuses, oh, they overshot it and there's all this stuff. But it was nonetheless dropped on that city, which is what it is.
Right.
Along with all of these other, you know, the Dresdens, the firebombing of Tokyo, the cutting off of the supply lines to the the concentration camps so they could, so that they could bring in their Jewish people and film it and to show everybody, as I said before in your show, 70 years after, to say, Mark, you're crazy, I saw the body. When we
yes.
were the people that cut off the supply lines and made sure nothing, and the Germans reached out to the Red Cross, huh? And that whole story, it's...
Sure.
And the
Germans allowed the Red Cross to come into all the camps, every single one of them. The Allies never allowed the Red Cross to come in to their encampments or any other camp that they had. Because
that
the Germans
a great question about the Rhine-Meadow camps, huh? Where were they then?
Yes, yeah, where, yes, exactly.
And as I brought up, you know, that the airmen of the RAF and the 8th Air Force primarily, they got captured, shot down or whatever, 98.9% of them lived.
Got home.
Got home through the big bad Nazis killing camps.
Yes.
So this
they made it home.
The proof is, of course, it's the key to try to get through to people on intellectual levels with, I tried, you know, with just unbelievable facts. And it, you know, like the 666 in big 6-foot red letters, the only one in the whole New York City skyline, and people still, oh, so what? It's,
That's unbelievable
Pope,
that people wouldn't notice
Pope,
it.
598 years, they die in office, every one of them. And now this guy is an ex-bouncer, a bar bouncer from Argentina. It's just,
holy cow.
Everybody probably knows on your show, who started the Jesuits and
yes.
what they were. You know, from Ignatius Loyola, born in 1491 in Spain. He's a Marano. So
right.
You have, like I said, you know, I don't know, maybe it's time for us all to pray in unison or meditate and try to put out love and, you know, ask for Blessed Virgin Mary to come on the White House lawn or something. I don't know. It's just,
sure.
We are in just extremely perilous times, and we are playing with games with, like, North Korea. North Korea will not back down. If we provoke them, they will hit us, and rightly so. And I don't believe in any kind of violence, but if I do, if you're going to hit me, I'm going to hit you back. I'm going to hit you back hard.
Well, the one thing about, I think that you were offline or something, because I asked Jim Perloff about that, and the leader of North Korea was educated in the West, and this might just be an agent state that is doing all this provocation in order to allow the U.S. military into that area for some other reason.
Well, that's what, you know, I've learned when I first learned this years and years and years ago about them separating countries on purpose to foment wars down the line, like Vietnam or Korea, or what they did with Germany. This is, you know, I was saying nobody has that premeditative murderous instinct, but, you know, of course, I was wrong. Just like when my sister told me they used to take the organs out of the Palestinians' bodies. It's the same thing. I never thought that humans could do such things.
Sure.
To each other. And because I believe in the goodness
But see, that's the problem, is that those of us who are not psychopathic would not ever, ever think of doing some of the things that psychopaths do to normal people. We just can't anticipate the evil that is within psychopathic hearts or minds. And so we just...
And especially since this world is becoming more and more Jewified.
Yes.
And it goes down to the least common denominator of good.
Yes.
So this starts to prevail outwards in like an opposite of an inverse square law, that all of a sudden more and more people realize, well, the only way I'm going to get ahead is to lie, cheat, and steal. Dead
sure.
Back.
Sure.
And so now we've had this inculcation, this multi-generational slow inculcation of evil. Since they've took over the Federal Reserve on December 23rd, 1913. And you have...
Which Congress allowed? Which Congress was there? There was enough of a quorum.
Yes, there was.
There was a majority?
There was not home, but there was enough, yes. Yep.
Yes.
And they passed, both houses.
Nobody
told Patroni yet, and you know, I've had conversations with Dennis Kucinich, not Ron Paul, and said, well, just the next politician, if anybody votes for any more politicians without them saying Israel did 9/11 and not just end the Fed, but that the Jewish financiers control the central bank known as the Federal Reserve, then it's, you know, we keep on getting, it's like that old Who song, don't get fooled again.
Sure.
And we just keep on getting fooled again because all they give us is evil and eviler.
Sure.
And let me say, you know, Donald Trump compared to Hillary Clinton, and I know all about the Clintons better than most because I worked with Jerry Brown when he was running for governor against, when he was running for president against Bill Clinton, and I met Bill Clinton and gave it to him face to face. I just wrote about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, and since subsequently, all the evil that the Clintons have done. It's so this lady was beyond a piece of work.
Yes.
You're not gonna, it's like I've been saying for everybody for the last 25 years, when you vote for evil, the lesser of two evils, you get evil. And the next time,
right.
the next time the bar goes down and you get two other evil people.
Right.
And there'll never be a third party. And you see now that in the third party they had who? Bernie Sanders a Jew and Jill Stein a Jew.
Right.
So you see Jill Stein coming out and somehow she got all this money to have recounts of the votes in certain places to try to have unfaithful electors and all this kind of stuff. And it's like everything is so blatantly obvious when you can connect the dots. And it all seems to go back to the same source. And don't get me wrong. If it was Irish, Catholic, German, French, which is what I am, I'd be yelling and screaming even louder perhaps. It's still with all of this, this makes you despise, it makes you use the H word, which I don't like to use, it makes you feel like that, because you want to lash out at such despicable, just murderous behavior. And yet, I believe the only way we're gonna get through this is with love. And because otherwise we become what they want us to become.
Sure. And you know the thing with politicians, they do own the politicians. It doesn't matter whether they seem to come from left field like Donald Trump, you know, claimed that
right.
he did.
The blue popular,
they do own the politicians. You do not get anywhere in politics unless you have Jewish money. That's just the way it is. And that has always been the case. I was going somewhere with this, and I can't remember. I've lost my way. But yes.
You can't become dog catcher. You can't. And I think maybe where you're going, which is where I thought you were going, was that's why they you know the FBI was put in place. What in 1912 it was or whatever.
Well, even that.
And then the CIA, so they can blackmail everybody.
Exactly. The FBI, that is what they did. Absolutely. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. I don't know whether we still have Mark on, but what I was going to... Oh, you're there. Okay. I've been reading a book. I read a lot of books all at one time, but I've been reading this one book that's very interesting, and is written by Victor Thorne, and it's called Hillary and Bill, The Drugs Volume, Part 2 of the Clinton Trilogy. And, of course, people
funny
know
you
that
you did that, because I was going to bring up Victor, and I didn't. He crossed my consciousness when I was talking about the Clintons, of course, because I didn't know Victor very well, but anyway.
And he tells all about the Clintons. He talks about the MENA drug trafficking and about the business people in Arkansas who really funded and paid for the Clintons. They enabled the Clintons to be who the Clintons were simply because they wanted business favors. They wanted to be able, like the people who grow chicken, they wanted to be able to flood the rivers of Arkansas.
Tyson,
yes.
The Tyson chicken
yes.
people, yes.
Yes.
The amount of things, this is what, when I was working with Jerry for president, I went out to California's Santa Monica office, and I, the first thing I did was, I went through a whole afternoon, I went through all their, everything they had on the Clintons, Bill Clinton specifically. And then I was going all around California with Jerry, and I went, you know, let me, if I'm in a place where you know the schedule of Bill Clinton, then tell me, which I did, and I waited for Bill Clinton, and I gave it to him. And he stopped in his tracks getting out of his car and looked at me, and I just kept on hitting him with stuff that almost no one knew at the time. And it was like the Secret Service was, anyway. But we are being divided. Huh? You're talking, you know, I'm talking about Jerry Brown, who people think is the devil now on the right, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not even going to go there. We're being divided left and right. We'd be divided every which way, identity, politics, you name it. Every which way we're being divided. So we don't see the enemy.
Right.
And the people on the left, the people on the right, we're all in this together. Whether,
yes.
you know, I would, like, I've told you many times, I was brought up like a sort of a liberalish type of New York City kid. And mm-hmm. as I've gone older, I've gotten more and more conservative, even though I believed in a lot of conservative things even when I was young. That's sort of a mixed bag. But people would more say, oh, you know, New York liberal type of thing. And, but I've grown as I've gotten older, and what we have to do is put, like I told you once before, John McConnell taught me this, the original founder of Earth Day, who was a conscientious objector, went into World War II, didn't go, went into, just threw him in jail. He said, we have to learn,
to say
bring
no.
each other together by everything that we agree on.
Right.
This is otherwise, and people don't see who the so-called enemy is. And I don't even like to degrade them, because not all of them are the enemy.
You know, they infiltrated the anti-war movement during the 60s. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yes, you take a look at Reuven, and they're all Jewish, right?
Yes, yes.
It's right, they start the war, and then they infiltrated on the peace side.
Right.
This is sort of a running joke. You know, I was one of the first people on 9-11, and I say, you know, there's six sides to 9-11, and the Jews owned all six sides.
Sure.
Of the so-called truth movement.
Sure.
Which is what I said last week on your show when I came out with 911trial.com, and I was on a list of everybody that was anybody that had anything to do with 9-11. And nobody got back to me when I'd had enough of this infighting, and I just put up, here's the answer. $7 million, and we can out these people. We can create it, and nobody got back to me.
Wow.
So I find it just, that they'd rather argue amongst yourself, or are they all, you know, they all puppets? I don't know anymore. I just try to come up with solutions that to this. And I'm now working on the greatest solution of my life, which I'm going to start June 1st, and it's been 4.5 years with this. And anyway, okay. Deanna, bless you once again.
You know? Bless you, Mark. We're out of time. Thank you so very much, listeners, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye now. Take care.